are seconded tonight's speakers.
I've been waiting for this moment all week and I had it. My name's Corinne, I'm an addict.
Hi, Corinne.
God, I'm so nervous. My heart is beating really fast. And I was sitting there, at the last minute I thought, I've got a resentment. And it's to God. I was like, why did you do this to me? Why did you put me here on a Friday night? Feeling as vulnerable as I do. And feeling really, really scared. So I just need to just acknowledge that really, that I do feel scared and feel vulnerable. And Jesus, let's catch my breath. It's good to be here, despite those feelings. And it really is. As time's gone on, I've kind of grown to kind of, understand myself a bit and to accept that, deep down, as a person, I feel quite vulnerable a lot of the time. And I can understand, why I found substances and I use things to change the way that I feel. Because these days I don't do that. And a lot of the time I'm kind of left feeling my feelings. And sometimes, particularly times like this, when everyone's looking at me, and I don't know how many people's in the room, and I've got a microphone in front of me, and I'm telling you my story, can feel quite hard. And the opposite extreme is that, I was called to service tonight. If I keep it simple, I'm called to service. And despite all the feelings, I did have a choice. I could have said, I can't do this because this is uncomfortable and difficult. But what won over the kind of, or what wins over, should I say, because I never say no, is that, step 12, I'm carrying the message tonight. And also, they told me that I can only keep what I have by giving it away. And I'm not saying that this is the only way to give it away, but this certainly gives me an opportunity to give it away. If my higher power gives me an opportunity to give it away, you can bet your bottom dollar I'm going to do it because I want to keep what I've got. So I want to I want to invite my higher power in now, even though I've told my higher power that I'm not happy, and ask my higher power to come into the share with me. And again, it's because I've grown to know and understand that I need my higher power. I need my higher power more than my higher power maybe needs me. And I've had to learn to rely on my higher power. And I didn't come here with those skills. I've had to learn, slowly over a period of time to rely on a power greater than myself. And I'm not subscribing or suggesting any particular power greater than myself. I'm suggesting for me that I've had to get a power greater than myself to help me. And the other reason why I say that is because, as time's gone by, I've also grown to know that I've got this ego that lives with me, which I've only recently become acquainted with. And that's probably because it's been there all the time, but it's been kind of active. And recently, through doing some, 6 and 7 work, I've known for the last few years, actually, when I've come to do shares, that I need to pray before I do a share, because there's a part of me that I didn't understand then, but I understand now, that feels very bad about myself on a quite a deep level. I don't really feel good about myself. And having multiple years of recovery and having a life beyond my wildest dreams, it's quite possible that I could sit in this chair and tell you all about me and how wonderful I am and how well I've done. And how good I am, and how bright I am. And that some of that's actually true. Really, it is. Some of it's true. But I don't need to walk around talking about it. I think that it all speaks for itself. Like, people don't... I'll say speak for myself. I don't need to kind of... I don't need to do that to feel good about myself. So I'm trying to practice awareness in that area. Also, I want to say a special welcome to the newcomers in the room. And I mean a real special welcome and a warm welcome. And I was thinking about that you know, when I first came to meetings, the warm welcome and what I felt was a special welcome was extremely important to me when I came. That people actually put their hand out to me and people welcomed me, and it felt like people were almost glad that I'd found it or glad that I'd made it here. And it doesn't always resonate with me. I don't always remember this, but I know that it's important and it's true that you know, being welcomed somewhere, not just by people. The literature welcomed me as well. The literature told me that, you know, that anyone may join us. The literature said that I could come here, and they also said, look at the similarities, not the differences. So I was able to kind of identify with people here, and I was able to, more so than anything else, I think I was able to get the heartfelt connection from people when they were speaking, you know, that identification, that I could connect with people, that they were actually speaking, their truth was speaking to me, and I could relate to that. I will tell you a little bit about myself. I've got to be careful when I say that a little bit. I'll just keep it brief. I was 12-stepped in 1993 by somebody who was in the criminal justice system, and he used to attend groups that I used to go to because I'd had a court case. I'd had a series of court cases, and you know, it says in the literature, jails, institutions, and death. You know, I did the jails, I did the institutions, and I kind of had an inkling that all wasn't well for me. You know, I had an inkling that I needed help, and I was seeking help before I even found Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I was going to different places, and people were coming to me as well, giving me little signs that something else is happening, something's brewing for you, girl. You know, it hasn't manifested itself yet, but when I look back, I can see the little signs of, like, people coming along and spirit, you know, giving me spiritual information, and the spiritual information wasn't necessarily something I could relate to. So they'd come and tell me about Christianity, and it'd be like, didn't really quite work for me, that. Or, you know, someone would come and tell me about some other spiritual path they was on, but it didn't work. And, you know, I wasn't surprised when I came here that there was something spiritual. I wasn't surprised because I was seeking that power greater than myself. I was seeking something over and beyond what I was doing on a daily basis to get me out of it. And I couldn't, you know, I couldn't stop using crack cocaine. You know, I couldn't stop using heroin. I felt completely powerless over my life. You know, it talks about kind of this illness being progressive. You know, my illness kind of started off in nightclubs, sniffing, partying, criminality. You know, it just kind of felt like I was just having a good time. And, you know, when I look back over my life, I can see that I had no sense of direction whatsoever. You know, it's almost like I came into this world. And I had a dream a couple of nights ago about my first boyfriend who gave me my first hit of crack. And he was in a dream and he was naked and he was using. And it kind of just brought back the insanity and the madness. I don't know if anyone's ever used with somebody who takes their clothes off when they've used, but I know that this is nothing kind of sort of like unique to my experience. But what I was thinking about, because I reflected on it, and I was thinking about when I came into the world, that I came into the world naked. I came into the world absolutely naked. And I came into the world to two people, my parents, who I would rely on to kind of nurture me and to love me and to connect with me as a young person. And my early years of experience of that, through no fault of their own, was not necessarily what I needed as a young person growing up. They couldn't give me what I needed. And subsequently, I had to try and find what I needed. I had to try and figure out what I needed to make me feel okay, because I felt really bad about me growing up. And I found loads of different things to change the way that I felt. I didn't pick up, you know, when I was five, I didn't pick up a joint. You know, in fact, I didn't pick one up till, you know, I was 14. But I believe that I found other things, other activities, other behaviours, other things to do. And as my recovery's unravelled, and, you know, it says it in the basic text, it says more will be revealed. You know, as more has been revealed to me, I've been able to kind of look back and see my process and how it's unravelled. And I think it's worth saying at this point that this is just my story. You know, and the more I'm, or the longer I'm here, and the more I'm called to be authentic and to tell my story, the more I get a little bit scared, because I get scared that my story might not be like your story, and you might think that my story is the wrong story, but it's just my story. So that's kind of my disclaimer at this point, that this has just been my journey of what's happened to me since I've come into the fellowship. And so I've been able to kind of look back, and initially with blame, loads of blame, you know. It was, and I was doing some 8th step work today, and I was looking back over some step work that I'd written, and I had this resentment towards my mum. And the resentment was that when I was in prison, she wrote me one letter, and obviously I'd written her a letter telling her what a terrible parent she was, and it was her fault that I was in prison and I wasn't happy. And she wrote one back, and I don't remember what she wrote, but I remember it being very brief. But at the end of the letter, she wrote, "Corinne, she said, there's only one way, and it's God's way, full stop." I think she might have wrote "Love, Mum," but I wouldn't have been able to see it at the time because I was too kind of in my own stuff. And I didn't really, again, you know, I'd got that message when I was in prison, and I didn't really kind of sort of like see how things were going to kind of pan out and how they were going to all fit together. So anyway, just getting back to kind of, you know, the story a bit. So this guy was, he was 4 years clean, and he had a girlfriend in NA. He was 18 months clean, and they were really happy bunnies. No, they were really happy. And they took me to my first meeting in Finsbury Park in North London, if anyone knows North London. And someone was sitting here just like me, but obviously in a different setup. And they were telling their story. And something kind of touched me. I think something touched my heart. I wouldn't have been able to say it at the time that it was my heart, but I felt like I felt something inside of me that was touched. And I think that was what I would describe now as truth. That I picked up some truth in the room. Like these people seemed to be speaking their truth, and somehow that truth seemed to be able to resonate with me, and I was able to connect with it, and I was able to say to myself, I'm coming back to hear a bit more of that. Even they told me to keep coming back. They gave me a basic text, and I signed it, and the guy who 12-stepped me wrote, "Don't forget the steps," in the basic text. I gave that basic text to my ex-boyfriend, as you do, you know, thinking someone else needs it more than you. I'll be okay. That's another story. But they said to me, keep coming back. And by that time, I was living in a hostel in Hackney in East London. There was a heroin addict and a crack addict upstairs, and there was a crack addict downstairs, and there was me in the middle, you know, indifferent, not really sure, using on my gyro, in a bad place, you know, dropped a lot of weight, family bewildered, very, very little friends. You know, the people who knock on your door to use with you were my friends. They're the ones that really didn't have anywhere else to go and were willing to give up a bit of their gear so they could use with me, or men that wanted to use with me and kind of sort of like indulge in other behaviours once the drug was gone. And I kind of, yeah, I was lost. You know, I was really lost, and I you know, I didn't have much going on for me. And so at that point, I think my higher power had captured me at a point in my life where I was so low that there wasn't really much happening, and it was almost like I was on this kind of, you know, they say rock bottom in recovery. I was at rock bottom, and there was only one way for me to go, and that was to be to kind of sort of like be lifted out of that rock bottom or stay there, and ultimately, it probably would have been death for me. I would have died. I may be able to take my own life, I don't know. But I kept going to meetings, and they said to go meetings regularly. They said, get a sponsor and do service. This is what they told me. And to be part of it, that's what I did. Because I was going anyway. I was going to meetings regularly. I was going most days. There was a tea commitment going, so I got myself a tea commitment. I got myself a sponsor. You know, my sponsor was like a punk rocker. She had nothing. And all my sponsors, it's been really interesting, the people that I've worked with in terms of sponsorship. Nearly all of my sponsors have been from completely different walks of life to me. Very different people. Very different people in terms of our hobbies and our interests and what we do and, you know, maybe our family background, maybe, you know, a class. But, you know, we had that kind of, we had that similarity that we were both addicts and my sponsors were willing to help me. They were willing to pass on to me what they had. And, you know, worked with my sponsor. And slowly but surely I started to recover. You know, I got myself a little flat. I'll never forget, it was a little one bed. Opened the door, you know, a little, and it's just my little pad. You know, and I remember going to pick up the keys and thinking, how much is the rent? You know, because I've never paid rent or anything like that before. So they gave me my keys and I continued. And then when I got to about 9 months clean, I'd be going to meetings and I'd be looking around the room and I'd be thinking, I know what she needs and I know what he needs and I know what that one over there needs. I say the same thing every week. And I ended up going out and picking up alcohol. You know, I don't know if I got fed up. I'm not sure what happened, to be quite honest. All I know is I was 9 months, and I must have just got, I don't know if I got bored. I can't tell you what happened. All I know is I was in the off licence, and I was buying drink. And this is weird, but I'll share it anyway, because it's good to share the weird stuff, because I think people can identify with the weird stuff, because it's the weird stuff that people think, I'm not going to share that, because they're going to think I'm weird. But I'm not weird. I went to the off licence and I bought a bottle of Wicked Lady. I don't know if anyone knows that drink. It's like syrup. And the woman served me, she gave me my change and she said, it's better to be level-headed. I looked and I thought, I can't swear on this thing. But I said, what the... Why did she say that to me? But it was almost like my higher power coming through this woman and saying, it's better to be... Maybe she should have said, it's better for someone like you to be level-headed. But she didn't know me well enough to be able to say that. But I could get with that. I could understand. But it's almost like she was giving me a real subtle message. And the guy who 12-stepped me, you know, thank God he came back. And he said to me, Kareen, this is in his deep Cockney accent, he said, you want it or not? And I thought about it and I thought, it doesn't give me much room for negotiation, does it? You know, that statement, you know, it doesn't give me an opportunity to have a dialogue with you about whether I want it or not. And I thought about it and I thought about the last 9 months. My mum and dad had been to visit me. I got myself a little pad. There was loads of little things that had happened as well, like people in NA gave me like a table. Someone came along and gave me a table. Someone else gave me like a TV. Another person had come and picked me up and take me to meetings. And there'd be all these little things that was kind of happening that now when I look back, I think that was kind of my higher power signalling to me that this was the way to be or to go, you know, that this was the kind of the path. And I went back. You know, and I've been back ever since. I picked up the 17-year chip last month. And it's, yeah, I mean, and I say that, but I can also understand why we've got Just for Today as well. Even with all those years, I can really get with that, because today's a new day for me, even though I've been in recovery a long time. It's a new day. It's brought new challenges, it's brought new opportunities for growth, and it's brought me new information. And I just try and be in today and take what today offers me. So the other question I asked myself, I suppose, was, well, what the hell is going to happen to me? I come to these meetings, I work the steps, I get myself a sponsor, I have no sense of direction, I don't know what's going on. But they said to me, keep coming back. And what happened to me is that people along the way made suggestions to me. And I met a woman yesterday, I've got to tell you this. I met a woman yesterday, and she's 20 years. Coffee with her. She said she never worked the steps until she was 20 years. She said, because they only suggested to work the steps. And I thought, wow, ouch, how did you do it? But that's her journey. That was her journey, and maybe God carried her. I've got no opinion on it, but I was like, wow, you know. But it happened when it happened. And I can look at that and think to myself, well, I came in and I worked the steps. And I worked the steps to the best of my ability. But there's been lots of things that's happened along the way since I worked the steps that have been revealed to me about the particular step that I've worked. Like, I came in and I've done step 1, 2, and 3. I thought I handed my life over to God. But I didn't. I handed over drugs to God when I'd done my first step 3. That's all I gave him. I didn't give him nothing else. I said, take the drugs and take the problems that go with drugs. But anything else, I'll deal with. And then it goes back to that kind of naked child who came into the world, who had to make a decision at some point growing up that I was going to be the one that looked after me. So my dad left me, my mum left me, and I didn't have a concept when I was growing up that there was a spiritual force in the world that would guide you and that would take care of you and that would be able to give you good orderly direction. I didn't grow up knowing, or even though I knew about higher power, I didn't have any idea that, unless I was really in trouble, or, you know, you read Psalms 23. You know, you read Psalms 23 and whatever happened, happened. And I can't even say that anything happened. But I survived it. And so people made suggestions and they said to me, why don't you go and do a little counselling course? Why don't you go to college? So me, I'm not, like I said, I'm here and I'm not knowing what to do. So I go to college, I do a little course. I go to college, I sign up to do an access course, I'm like maybe two years in, and I get to sort of like first 3-4 months, and I'm like, I can't do this, I need money, and I couldn't go to college, I wasn't ready to go to college, I wasn't ready, and the other thing is, I was so self-sufficient, that I really found it hard to just be kind of like still when I first got here. I was so into, like, making everything look okay. You know, I really wanted to piece myself back together again. I wanted people to not look at me and say, oh, look, there's Karina. She used to be on crack, didn't she? She looks all right now. You know, I wanted people to see me. And I did it all by myself. So I wasn't capable of having God in there at that time. But I was able to do what I needed to do to get through. And I continue to work the steps, and again, you know, when I worked my 6 and 7, I never really, really got it. Just thought, all right, defects of character, willing this, hand it over. But I never really, really kind of understood it, you know, and as time's gone on, I've understood more about what that means. You know, for me now, my 6 and 7 is about doing the opposite of what I do to be self-sufficient, if that makes sense. So when I feel fear, my step 6 is you learn to trust. You know, when you have anger, you try and practice the opposite. You know, when it says we practice these principles in all our affairs, and the penny's just dropped that my principles, what I need to practice, is the opposite to my defects. So all the defects that I have now need to become principles. And if you can imagine coming off the streets and, you know, using and partying and, you know, all the stuff, all my principles are pretty, like, different. You know, the principles that I came in here with were not necessarily, you know, they say honesty, open-mindedness and willingness. When I first got here, the only thing I could be honest about was my life wasn't good. I couldn't really be honest about other things because I didn't have the ability to kind of have enough trust in the process to be willing to be honest about other things. And, you know, that's okay because this thing, this process, it unravels for us in different ways as individuals. Every single person in this room is going to have their more will be revealed to them when it's their time or when they're ready. And that's been my experience. And that's why it's so important for me to remain humble and as humble as I can, and try and remember to be humble, and try and remember to, to trust God. You know, I pray harder now at 17 years than I ever prayed. You know, I work this now harder than I've ever worked it, because I really do get that there's a part of me that wants to kind of sort of like run the show. And now when I'm running the show, it's not necessarily kind of sort of like in my best interest. And it's usually based in fear, because I'm scared. And out of that fear, I find it hard to trust. So anyway, back to the suggestions. So I followed all the suggestions. You know, I followed the step work suggestions. I followed the get to meetings regularly suggestions. I followed the service suggestions. And when it was difficult, you know, I came in the meetings and I was willing to show myself, you know, I was willing to kind of let people know that, you know, that it was tough. Recovery, I don't necessarily think it's easy. I always say it's not easy, but it's possible. You know, it's possible to work through the stuff that comes up. And you know, I've wanted to take my own life. 15 years in, I wanted to die. Because I was in so much pain, and part of it was because of self-will. It was I didn't know how to let God help me, because I've had to learn to let my higher power help me. I find it so difficult to get close to people. You know, I was driving there thinking, why don't you ask someone to come with you? I've driven all the way over here on my own. I don't know if anyone can understand that, but this is a kind of an isolation that I kind of have. And again, it's caught up with my fear and my lack of trust and feeling that I have to be on my own all the time. And what my higher power is trying to do now is move me out of that. You know, I never really did the coffee shops. See you later. Bye. Great meeting. I'm out of here. You know, I was gone. I never really did the kind of closeness and intimacy, because my early childhood wasn't like that. My early childhood was a very dysfunctional closeness and intimacy. You know, very unhealthy patterns. And I think that what I'm beginning to understand is that my higher power just wants the best for me. Really does want me to kind of really want me to feel good about myself as well. Because I started off by saying that I kind of got a disposition where I don't feel good inside. But I'm not going to feel good if I don't try and practice things that make me feel better. Now, when I do go and do something that feels difficult, I feel better afterwards. When I don't do it, I feel like I sit thinking about what I didn't do, which kind of perpetuates how I feel about myself, which is not good. And I thought, did I understand what you're talking about, Karina? And I think, yeah, you do understand. So anyway, you know, getting back to suggestions, because I think, you know, maybe my higher power just wants me to really kind of push suggestions tonight. I'm getting that coming through quite strongly, that suggestions almost kind of sort of like saved my life. You know, being able to respond to suggestions and being able to recognise suggestions when they were coming from the right place, from the good place. And that, I don't think before I came to recovery that anyone ever really made a suggestion to me, or maybe they tried to make suggestions to me, but I wasn't in a place to be able to. I think my parents tried to make suggestions to me about stuff, but I just wasn't able to pick it up. But so I kept coming back, and I went to this kind of place where I was again back out there. I went out into the workplace for a few years. I did a course. Counselling course, and then I went and did a diploma in counselling for 2 years. So it's the first time that I'd actually been in school for 2 years. I completed it. I got a kind of a good level pass. I got the best level pass, sorry. Got to get out somewhere, hasn't it? Yeah. All right, you've been out now. So then I worked in the field, and then I kind of got fed up with that. Or I don't know if fed up's the right word. But anyway, I kind of felt like I outgrew it. And I hope that doesn't sound like, but I did. I felt like there was other things for me to do. And one night I was... I started a business. I still got it, a consultancy business. I started to work as a consultant. And again, I can see, though, how even my business life and my work life took me back to isolation, you know, a place where I felt safe, you know, because I kind of run my kind of work world myself, you know, and I only have associates that work with me. They don't really come close. And again, I kind of still struggled with being in the world with other people. And I was listening to someone do a share one night. I'd been in a relationship for a few years, and we split up, and I came back to London. I was in Kent, and I was at home ironing one night, and I listened to this woman who recorded herself doing a share in Canada, and she was talking about addicts, and she was talking about being a lawyer, and that she was representing addicts in court, and that, you know, how, you know, that it was satisfying the work. And I'm eyeing in a way thinking, that's what something that I would have liked to have done. I would have liked to have been a lawyer. And if there was anything that I could think of that I ever wanted to do, you know, when I was at school, it was either Columbo or a lawyer, you know, because I love it when Columbo goes, I've just got one more question. It's so great, isn't it? Because they're like thinking they got away, and he's like... That's me anyway. Like, I've showed you a little bit about myself. I love Columbo. And I just think he's great. And he's scruffy, but he's a great guy. So anyway, I'm listening to her share. And so anyway, Monday morning, I get online and I think, you know what? Look up law schools. So I'm thinking, that is God. Me, in my higher power. I go online and da-da-da-da-da. And then, you know, they say to write a personal statement. So I just wrote a statement very quickly. It was very, very quick. Bosch sent. They wrote to me and they said to me, come for an interview. And I was still like, they're not going to accept me, yada, yada. Anyway, I went and they gave me a test. Something that happened in a classroom at school. And I was right up my street, you know, someone who was excluded from school and told never to come back. I thought I can answer that question, you know, sitting in my head. So I answered the question and I had an interview, and basically they accepted me. And the reason why I share that is because I didn't ever know what I was going to do with my life when I came into recovery, but God knew. You know, my higher power knew that I possibly, and I say possibly because I don't want to sound too kind of grandiose, that I possibly had skills and abilities that he could use out there in the world. And I used to use my skills and abilities in very calculated ways in the criminal world. Very, very calculated. And thank you. And I think that my higher power saw that I had the ability but wanted to find something for me to do useful in the world. You know, it says about kind of like, on the medallion, it says God, service and society. And I think that that bit of society was what was I, you know, I kind of get the God, I do the service, but there's a bit in society that I think as addicts we can be very effective in society. There's so much out there in the world that we can be effective to do, and I felt that maybe my higher power wanted me to do that. So anyway, I've just completed my second year of law school, and crazy. I just got all my papers back, and you know, I don't know, it's weird, like, you know, I never really had any confidence. You know, they told me to leave school, they told me not to come back, they said I was a danger and a threat, and maybe I was. I was angry, I was frustrated, I was a stressed out kid, and I've done really well at school. And you know, my higher power, I think, in this process has showed me right from the very beginning that this is my will for you, by opening the doors continuously and making it easy. And when I think that I'm not in my higher power's will, things are always hard, they're stressful, I'm holding on for a bit of life. Particularly, I mean, I can use the analogy of a relationship that's not working. But you don't have to have an intimate relationship that's not working to understand what's not God's will for you. You know, I can have other things that are not working very well, which don't feel right, don't feel spiritual, don't feel like I'm being really honest with myself. They're the things I feel that are not really God's will for me. And I think that what my higher power wants me to try and do is to try and be honest with myself. really put my hand on my heart and say to myself, Corinne, are you happy? You know, is this the best you could do today? You know, do you need to say sorry to that person? You know, do you need to rest? Do you need to take care of yourself? Oh God, I feel emotional now. I managed to get through the whole chair without being emotional. The man just told me I've got 5 minutes and I want to cry. It's crazy. God, sorry. Yes. Oh God. You know why I'm crying? Because I'm surrendering, you know, and it's such a beautiful thing in surrendering, but it's so scary. And that's so scary to really, really kind of let go. And as the years have gone by, like, I've managed to let go more and more. And the more I've let go, the more I feel anxious. You know, this is the re-emergence. This is like the new living. You know, living, managing the anxiety, going to meetings, doing the step work, connecting with other people, anxious to, and trusting that all will be well. Yeah, that's kind of, and learning, you know, that little girl who kind of grew up in the world thinking that I had to be action man, action woman, I had to be all to everybody, like everybody, love everybody, caretake everybody, do everything for everybody to make me feel okay. I don't need to do that no more. All I need to do is I just need to get up on a daily basis, you know, hand my will for my life over. I just need to hand my will over to God. And I have to trust when I do that, that God's going to take care of me. That's what I've got to do. And that's what I've never been able to do. Sorry. And we'll leave it there, thanks.